Hey, this is Brian Adias. You are live and in color with Wolfie D.
Hey, this is Jimmy Street, host of the Live and in Color with Wolfie D podcast. Hear the life and times of professional wrestler Wolfie D. From his time in the territories with PG-13 to his time in WWE, ECW, WCW, TNA, and more. Nothing is off limits and nothing will be held back. Thanks again for tuning in. Here he is, Wolfie D.
Welcome, welcome, welcome once again, ladies and gentlemen, to Live and in Color with Wolfie D and my man Jimmy across the street. Buddy, what is going on today?
Nothing, man. Just living the dream. Nothing. No, but you know what, man? I love this time we have together, man. I love this podcast. I love what we're doing. I think it's a lot of fun. We've got some cool sponsors working with us, Captain's Corner, Kayfabe Cave with Todd Camp. We've got some cool things coming up, man. I'm just having a lot of fun. And this, as much as work as I put into this podcast, man, I'm having a lot of fun. And so I just want that to be said, you know.
Yeah. And one of our guests today is another Captain's Corner guy, Brian Adias. Not Adidas, but Brian Adias.
Right.
And that's Captain Nick hooked us up with that. And since you mentioned Todd Camp, next week we're going to have Jimmy Gold and Bunkhouse Buck, because he's doing a signing down at the Kayfabe Cave in Pulaski, Tennessee, coming up. What's the date on that one?
That is April 20th. He's going to be there from 12 p.m. to 3 p.m. Jimmy Gold and Bunkhouse Buck, Southeastern Continental World Championship Wrestling legend, part of the Welch family of famous wrestlers, and man, wow, you know, dude, what a history that guy's got. And we're just so blessed to get him on. And again, thank you, Todd, for helping us make that happen. I do want to shout out Todd again. Todd actually gave us the connection for Action Mike Jackson. We didn't put that over enough, but anyway, I'm really having fun with these guys we're working with right now. It's really
that's what it's all about, man. You got to work together instead of stabbing each other in the back. And that was something I was going to address. I know some people saw some of the stuff that I had put on social media and things, and there's just, man, I'm just not going to stoop to the level. I was very upset, and you know, I've got a few people, you being one of them, that I talk to a lot. And, you know, I really hate it when someone tells me I love you like a brother, man. I love you like a brother, Wolf. And then on the other side, they're stabbing me in the back.
Right.
And you know, there's only a couple of people like you that you know, I trust like that. Another one's Tony Anthony, Dirty White Boy. I talk to him all the time. And at the end of every conversation, he says, I love you, Wolf. I said, I love you, Tony. You know, and he means it. And I know that.
Yeah.
And there's other people that have told me that, you know, since the early 90s. Oh, you're my brother, man. Oh, I love you. No, you don't. No, you don't. You call and check on me. And you want to act like a damn high school teenager on dumb shit, man. And
right.
There's a few people that I really want to call them out on stuff, but I just don't want to stoop that low, because the things I say would trickle down. It would not only affect them, but it would affect people around them. And I'm just not that motherfucker. So anyway,
even though you really want to be,
say it to my fucking face.
Yeah. Yeah.
But anyway, enough of that rant. just had to get that off my chest. I really want to do it in a different way, but like I said, I just don't want to be that guy. But I'm better than that.
Yeah, because once you hit the nuclear button, it's bad for everybody.
Man, I can't stop when I go like that. I've lived for many years, let me tell you.
Yeah.
And it's just because I'm a nice guy. Somebody else might tell you different, that I'm not. And anybody that knows me knows different. But anyway, somebody's always wanted. I told Jimmy this, listeners, the other day, man. Being in the podcast business, the wrestling podcast business, is almost like being back in the wrestling business and all the bullshit that comes along with it, man.
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
Jealous, backstabbing motherfuckers, man. But anyway, on a better note, we are going to be talking again, like I said, to Brian Adias. And man, what I remember him from, you know, I didn't get to watch a lot of World Class as a kid, but I watched enough where I knew who he was. When Nick told us about him, I was like, oh yeah. And so this should be a cool conversation, man. Best friends with Kerry Von Erich growing up, you know, there's some good stories there, man.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, he's like, you know, how we always say, well, you've said it many times, Tracy Smothers is a step Armstrong, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Brian Adias is basically a step Von Erich, if you think about it. You know? Sure. So
that's pretty absolutely, man. This will be good. And we've had our world-class, kind of like a world-class reunion here on the show the past few weeks, man. And I believe this is the last of them for a minute, but hopefully we can track some more folks down, because it's always cool talking to guys that I've never met because, you know, of age or just different territory or something like that. So it's cool in the different perspectives and all that good stuff, man.
Definitely.
So anyway, Jimmy, let's stop yapping and let's get Brian Adias on the phone.
We'll be right back after these messages.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey folks, to get your official Live and in Color with Wolfie D merchandise, go to prowrestlingtees.com/livewolfied. Check it out.
If you're listening to Live and in Color with Wolfie D on Apple Podcast and like what you're hearing, go ahead and leave a 5-star rating. And while you're at it, write a review. Tell us what you liked. Tell us what you'd like to hear in the future. It's very important to us and always appreciated. Thanks again.
So where are y'all located? Where do y'all do your podcast out of?
Well, I live, this is Wolfie, I'm in Somerset, Kentucky. I just moved here probably 4 years ago. I'm a Nashvilleian and a Memphis wrestling kid, and that's where I got my start and made my name and all that. Jimmy, however, lives over in the boonies.
In Mooresville, North Carolina, home of Nelson Royal. So,
I was in the Carolinas when Nelson Royal was wrestling.
Yeah, yeah. All right, we're going to talk about that, I promise.
He's a little workman. So
yeah.
I'd use him as a job guy over there, but he was a great worker.
Oh, yeah. He trained a lot of good guys too. He's kind of him and Gene Anderson had a school behind his Western store. Had some good guys come out of there, George South and some of those other guys. So pretty cool history, especially in the Carolinas, you know. So
yeah, I went down there, and when Gene had those wrestling schools there at the Coliseum, they'd meet people there and have them run and get them all tired, and then Gene asked me to come down there a couple different times and then stretch them.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's great.
And run them off.
That's great. What's funny?
It's hard for them, man, but that's the way it goes, you know.
Yeah. I mean, but you know, I lived in Nashville for like 15 years, and that's where I met Wolfie, and this. And then we started this podcast. But yeah, I live in Mooresville, North Carolina, and Somerset, Kentucky. Two of the most random places. But
I don't know. I would have never thought I would move to Kentucky first of all, but then this little place. Yeah,
I tell you what, I love the Carolinas. I told my wife if I ever lived anywhere outside the Dallas area right here, that's where I would go. I lived in Charlotte for 18 months, and it's beautiful over there. So
yeah,
I like Kentucky, Tennessee, Carolinas, all that. That's a nice country.
Yeah, great.
God's country, ain't that what they call it?
That's it.
Yeah.
Are y'all working in cahoots with Nick?
Yes, sir.
In Orlando?
Yeah. He helped us book this, and we're very happy.
Yeah, he got us. Al's been on with us, Al Perez. Then we had Mark Lawrence and you and a couple other people at other times. And then I've also like done the signings with Nick and stuff like that. So, yeah, Nick's awesome, man. He's a good dude, man.
He's a pro for sure. Yeah.
Yeah, great guy. I've worked with him before.
All right, sir. All right, here we go. Jimmy, you ready?
Yes, sir.
All right. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we're back, and As always, man, I am stoked for this one. Like we said before we went to break, Jimmy, we're going to have another great guest in Brian Adias. And you know what? I am this day years old. Actually, I don't know, a couple of days years old, I guess, when I realized that as a young kid, when I was watching this guy on TV, I thought he was Adidas, like the shoe, man. And I know for a fact that they had a misprint on, do you remember what show or pay-per-view or something like that where they actually did put him as Brian Adidas? And so for all these years, I thought he was Brian Adidas. Did you know that, Jimmy?
Yeah, Starrcade 84 versus
that's it. Okay,
Ito.
That's it. I couldn't remember. That's it. So anyway, it still sounds very similar. And what a heck of a worker, man. And when I watch him work, I'm going to introduce him right now. Before I do, though, I just want to let him know that watching him work in his ring attire or something, maybe, I hope there's no heat here, but kind of reminds me of an Eddie Gilbert heel. And that's a good thing in my book. But anyway, ladies and gentlemen, let's welcome Mr. Brian Adias.
Well, I appreciate it, guys. That's a great intro. Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. I am Eddie and I kind of work the same way. And I know Eddie was a heck of a worker. So that's,
Heck yeah, man.
So he was a general for sure. And I tried to be that as myself. So
absolutely, man. There's no better feeling than being the general in the ring. Am I right?
Oh, nothing better. Well, you've earned your stripes, so to speak, when you know what you learn the moves at first, into the psychology.
Right.
That's when you really get into the wrestling part that so many people outside the business know about. But once you can go out there and work with a broomstick and have a good match, you know, and have people get into it, that's when you know you've got a pretty good grip on what you're doing and what makes a good match a good match.
Yeah, and in the fan investment, which is, you know, in my opinion, kind of missing these days. I was just watching you and Mike Von Erich in a match where it was a 10-minute time limit. You put up $2,500 if he could beat you in 10 minutes. And, you know, of course, you're stalling, you're rolling out, you're doing. I mean, it was so good when you could do stuff like that. It was just, you know, because now they, you know, boring, all that stuff. But then they were invested in you and the characters and the people and that they believed. And it was so much better then, in my opinion.
I agree, man. I agree 100%. You got to. There's a story behind everything. And, you know, I'll tell you a funny story talking about my wife and I said, hey, this AEW wrestling was coming on like 2 or 3 days ago or this weekend. And I told my wife, I said, let's watch this for a little bit. Cause I haven't watched any of that stuff in 30 years, you know, none of it. No, WWE or none of it. But, and I it's like, man, there was so little wrestling and all this bullshit talking and all that. It just doesn't make sense. I mean, you know, they're drawing good money, so they're doing something right. But the way we learned it and everything, it's, you know, and it's all good. If they're making money, I'm all good with it. I don't have anything bad to say. It's just a completely different format than what we did, you know, for TV and all that. So.
Yeah. It's just, it's like what I tell people is like, dude, these guys are great athletes. They do stuff that I could never do even when I was younger. But it's just not what I signed up for. It's not the same thing, you know?
Yeah. Well, David Manning and I are real good friends. We've been friends since 1973, the referee, and he basically broke me in here with the boys with Fritz and Kerry and them. But, he said, man, I watched AEW and the stuff. He said, man, these guys don't take care of each other at all.
Oh, no, Lord.
Some of the things, they're dropping each other on their head. They're doing these things. Like, I saw this girl do a super kick, and she kicked that chick in the freaking throat, man. Hard. Flipped her backwards, kicking her right in the, lucky it didn't kill her, you know, break that hyphoid bone. And, you know, your limits right there, it's lucky it didn't crush it because she kicked her hard.
Well, somebody said it
like that. They would have a receipt coming. That's for sure.
Oh, absolutely. But those are things. See, that's another part of it, man. Like, receipts cannot be given. You can't stretch nobody. You can't do this, or, you know, you'll get canceled or get fired or and all this kind of stuff. Sure. So, I mean, there's no policeman no more. There's none of that.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's a different the world's a different place than when.
Exactly.
You know, when I was wrestling, there was the internet wasn't here yet. So what does that tell you?
Yeah. Yeah. Same here. We were in different dressing rooms, and referee brought us the finish.
Oh yeah.
I miss those days.
I think if there's somebody's drawing money and stuff, it just makes me cringe saying that they've got these people that are riders for the show and stuff. That shit makes me cringe, man.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Nobody can write me is what I always felt like. And being a Memphis guy on live TV, the first interview I ever did with Lance Russell, you know, nobody told me what to say. They said, I need you to hit these points. And I did, but I had my back to the camera. That was the only thing I messed up on. I got my message across, but I had my back to the camera. But I learned after that, after Jerry Jeter cussed me out.
When I was in Mid-Atlantic with the Mid-Atlantic Wrestling, they told me when I was there, they said, hey, man, you got a 222. It was on TV. And I said, what's a 222? 2 minutes and 22 second interview by yourself.
Oof.
And I was like, oh, man, this seems like forever when you're green, you know? So, but I look back at them and watch some of those here about a year ago. And, man, I actually nailed them pretty good. So I was really nervous, but I didn't show it as I look back, you know? So it's pretty pretty cool that I had enough going for me, you know.
Super cool. We've had Al Perez on. We've had Mark Lawrence in coordination with the Captain's Corner for the Jimmy. Go ahead and nail the gimmick there.
Glory Days Grapple Con at the Rosen Center in Orlando on April 20th. Don't miss it. Yes, sir.
So we've had them on, and one of my first questions to both of them has been, have you seen the Iron Claw? So I'm going to go ahead and throw that out there to you.
Yeah, we actually, my wife and I, Monica, saw it with Kevin and his family when it came out. And,
gotcha. Cool.
You know, I'm going to just keep it nice and short. I think, you know, the dude that did that movie, that produced and directed it, never even talked to Kevin until the movie was completely done. So,
exactly.
But that doesn't say everything. Make a long story short, it was not a documentary. It was Hollywood make believe, and I think they'll just leave it at that. Hollywood does their thing on everything. I didn't like the way they made Spritz look like a monster, and they made Kev's wife Pam act like she was some type of groupie. You know, that's the farthest thing from the truth. Yeah. You know, Chris, the youngest brother, wasn't even in there. They made Mike look like an idiot, but you know, it's just. It's Hollywood. That's all I got to say about it.
No, that's cool, man. I appreciate that answer. So you and Carrie being, you know, friends from a young age, what did you guys, and this is just because I had like a wrestling buddy. I didn't have, you know, somebody that was Carrie Von Erich and his dad was Fritz Von Erich, but I had a buddy, and me and him were just like probably one of the only ones that liked wrestling back then. And this was, I'm talking like 1983 or something. And me and him loved wrestling. And I know the things we talked about, the things we did. But as far as non-wrestling stuff, what did you and Carrie do? And I'm not talking athletics. We'll get into that too. But like, what did you and Carrie do when you hung out, man? Did you just run up down the street?
We started first grade together in 1966 in a small town called Lake Dallas and went all the way through 12th grade together. But there was 1,000 people in that town. It was the country, you know, about 20 miles north, 30 miles north of Dallas. And, we hunted and fished. We were just country boys. We always had our 22s and our shotguns with us. We fed, kept around the summer. We fed the dove to get them ready for September. In the winter from, you know, fall, we put out corn at the ponds where the ducks were. And we, you know, in the spring did all the stuff for the quail and had a habitat for the quail and everything and fishing. And we were just typical small town guys, man, that were outdoors. And of course, when it come time chasing girls, when it came time, that was 24/7.
Okay, so okay, since you say that, so back in the day, like before Kerry Von Erich was Kerry Von Erich, the chiseled man, like in school, was Brian Adidas or Kerry Von Erich the ladies' man? Which one? Who got the more the girls?
I think we both did had our fair share. if just being who we were, I would say it was pretty even. But man, after he became Kerry Von Erich, the women just flocked on. I got my share too, though, when I was wrestling. Way more than any dudes that walking up down the street, whatever.
For sure.
Crazy stories. But most people, I could write a book and you wouldn't believe it,
Absolutely. I say the same thing all the time. If I hadn't got into wrestling, I don't know what would have happened to me, but it might not have been as fun. I know that. So one, sorry, Jimmy, I know I get on a roll sometimes.
No, it's what, good. I have something to add to that girl thing, but you're good.
Okay, go ahead with the girl thing then.
No, our mutual friend, George Weingroff, we love that guy. He's a great friend of the show. He wrestled down there, and he was telling a story about how Kerry came out just to watch a match on the side of the sportatorium, and he was kind of trying to hide, and the one girl saw him, and then basically he was flocked. And by the time that they got those girls off of him, he didn't have a stitch of clothing on him.
Oh yeah, that happened every time. Those guys were rock stars down here, man. People don't realize. I think one of the things, going back to a plug for the Iron Claw, I think one thing that the positive was for that movie, I think it had a bunch of people realize how big these guys were.
Sure.
How much of a big deal they were here in Dallas with that movie coming out.
Yeah.
And they realized, that these guys were rock stars, man. I mean, they walked on the water around here, and it was crazy. They were so over, it was ridiculous. It was you could never go anywhere with any of them. We had traveled better. I mean, you got mobbed everywhere you went.
Yeah. So what I was fixing to go into there was talking about the athletics. Now, my stepfather, he's the one that actually introduced me to wrestling before 1983. Okay, so I'd have been like 9 or 10 years old. I don't even know that I knew there was something called professional wrestling. And my stepdad, he was a big old dude, man. He was like 6'9", 300 plus pounds, and he loved wrestling. And then he got into it later on and kind of helped me get into it. But he also was a Tennessee state record holder for the discus. And he held the record for, oh man, I can't remember how many years it was. I had heard about it, and then it got broken when I still lived at home. So somewhere between probably somewhere around 92, 93, something like that, it got broken. He was heartbroken when his record got beat. And I know Kerry was the discus guy. You were the shot put guy. So talk about some of that.
Yeah, we were in A school, just 1A when I was a sophomore, and then we were 2A when I was a junior and senior. So basically, Kerry and I I didn't even throw the shot put until my senior year. I threw the discus, with me and Kerry, and we'd always place first and second everywhere we went, but I started throwing the shot put my senior year just so I could break the school record, and I shattered it by like 7 feet or something.
Really?
I threw over 60 foot in high school with a shot foot, and I threw 172 in the discus. Kerry threw 197. He was number one in the nation when we were seniors. We placed first and second at the state track meet at Texas State Track Meet. First and second in the discus, and I got third in the shot put. So, but it was crazy, man. And then I went to University of Texas Arlington on a track scholarship, which I went 4 years and won my conference 4 times in a row in the shot put there in the Southland Conference Division I.
Yeah.
And my record, Kerry and I still hold the records at Lake Dallas High School for the shot and the discus after 78. So 46 years, we've held the shot and discus record at Lake Dallas High School to this
day. That's amazing.
That is cool. And I'm not going to lie to you, Jimmy, I'm fixing to do a rolling hot tag because I'm fixing to look up my stepdad's record. I want to see what I want to see the distance and see what Brian.
Yeah, go ahead,
Jimmy, hot tag, bam.
Yeah, I mean, so go ahead.
He was going right at 200 feet. He was through at the state track meet when we got first and second. He had 5 of 6 throws that were between 193 and 197 feet. So he was really, really consistent. He had had a couple over 200, but so he was a 200 foot high school discus thrower, which was pretty strong.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. Well, I'm going to stay in this range since you're looking that up, Wolfie. So I asked Baby Doll this same question because we just had her on recently and we were talking about it. And, you know, I know Jim Neidhart and I knew Carrie threw the discus. And then, of course, I knew about you throwing the shot and her throwing the shot. That what is it about shot putters that make amazing wrestlers?
I think it's your leverage and your strength, your inner core.
Okay.
And really, for an amateur wrestler and a shot putter, have a lot of the same core strengths that make you really good.
Yeah.
It's that inside strength that, man, you have to be strong to throw the shot. You have to be quick. And it's the same thing with amateur wrestling. You make good wrestlers, same people, because it's those same qualities. They're the exact quality.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's not too far off from what she said. Did you feel like there was just like an immediate kinship with him that even in first grade? Because I remember how I was friends with people in first grade or kindergarten or whatever. And then we have developed into closer friends through high school and stuff. But can you even think of a time without Carrie in your life?
Not really, because I've got a picture of Carrie's 7th birthday party on February 3rd, 1967 at their house out here where they all live. And that's how long and good friends me and Carrie were. You know, I was at the birthday party and a couple of the guys that I still are friends with today at that birthday party in 1967. But Carrie and I were just kind of, we were a lot alike. We liked the same things. We were really, really evenly matched from a physical standpoint growing up. And, being from the small school, we were both standouts. You know, we were it and we were real competitive. So I think our competitive nature kept us good friends too. We didn't get jealous of one another or anything like that for being good at, you know, we were really, really competitive. I mean, we were all state linebackers too, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And I just, you know, Wolfie brought this up and I like this thought, like what's a regular day for Brian and Carrie. But let me ask you this. If you're riding in the car with Carrie and you and he are jamming out to some tunes, I'm a musician, so this is an important thing to me here. What are you all listening to? What kind of music are y'all jamming out to?
Well, we were listening. We were rock and roll.
Yeah.
I remember our junior or senior year in high school, man, there was so much good music come out late 70s. You know,
the best.
Van Halen,
the best.
Cars. That's what we were listening to. You know, I loved Hendrix. You know, I had a brother that's 5 years older. So, man, I was listening to Eric Clapton and Cream.
Yeah.
Derek and the Dominoes and Layla and Purple Haze and Allman Brothers and everything, you know, back then. And then I liked rock and roll. I was never a big country fan. I like to go to the country bars, you know, and chase women. That's where there was always a nice place to hook up with girls. But rather than the rock and roll clubs weren't as good, you know. But
Right. Yeah. A lot of dudes.
We were rock and rollers.
Yeah. Yeah, that's cool. And of course, you know, Modern Day Warrior. I mean, come on, you know, Rush, you can't knock.
Let me tell you the story about that the song and how he came to play that song. And
yes, I would love that.
He had a green 1980 Corvette and we were going to, he was doing some, going over and doing shots for TV with Bill Watts in Shreveport with Mid-South.
Yeah.
And he said, man, everybody's starting to play music going through the ring. And I got to get a song for me to play on this TV tonight. And we had all that. And of course, Rush with Tom Sawyer, we picked that out on the way through Shreveport, Louisiana as his song in that 80 model green Corvette. So,
yeah,
that's cool, man.
Of course, Super Kevin Bowl. Had Stranglehold too. You know, you got to love all the Nuge exactly. and stuff. But anyway, go ahead, Wolf. Sorry.
Yeah, I was just going to say, man, without me taking away from what we're doing right now, I tried a quick thing, and without me like just totally zoning out from what we're talking about, I can't find it at the moment. But I mean, anyway, somebody that holds the record for that long, you know, it was pretty good. I was trying to look for the feet.
He probably threw anywhere from 180 to 200 feet would be my guess.
Yeah, you know? I can't remember, but I swear I will look it up. And if you don't mind, when I do, I'll text it to you.
Sure, you can text it to me. Absolutely. Yeah.
But yeah, I thought that was the coolest thing. And so Kerry came up with the discus punch, which, you know, makes a lot of sense. What is anybody going to do the shot put punch?
Well, you know, I guess that would have been something that I could have done as well. But, you know, I didn't want to, you know, being here and being a baby face, you were never going to get over the Von Erichs. So,
no, right.
I didn't have to do something where I come up with something that was sort of like his deal.
Yeah.
So I just did my own, you know, stuff. But,
yeah.
You know, I had the tool, the Oriental tool with the thumb.
Yes. But, yes.
Yeah.
That was kind of a freak deal. I hit Kevin. We were at Fort Worth doing TV, and I hit Kevin, and it knocked him out. He turned purple. He had
for
a
real?
Seizure.
Wow.
Yeah, for real. Yeah. With me, it was a six man. It was, me and a couple other heels, and then him and Brody and one of the Fantastics.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. And I actually, it was a fluke thing. And then actually we played it back. It looked like I hit him with my thumb. So that's where we come up with the Oriental tool and ran with that. So.
That's awesome. I love that move.
Bruiser Brody and Tommy Rogers. Kevin might not have made it that night. He had some type of, I think he had a seizure or something, or if I hit him somewhere in the carotid artery or something, and it caused something bad. Yeah, he turned purple, man. I'm talking about
it. And you're not working me right now.
No, I'm not working you at all. It was a shoot. I didn't mean that. We had no idea it was going to happen. And I hit him, and he made all this real contortion, contortive deal where his hands come up like, you know, somebody that has muscular dystrophy or something.
Right.
Having an attack, and he fell. And when he hit the ground, he was blue. And Brody said, "Y'all scoot." So the heels scooted, and they got the personnel EMTs out there real quick. They never did figure out what happened to him. What caused it? So we just went with it that I had this new Oriental tool.
Heck yeah, man, that made your gimmick.
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah.
Hey, Jimmy, for real, man, right now is a perfect opportunity. We were talking about with Mark Lawrence about the Brody thing. I think you need to confirm this with Brian here.
Yeah, Brian, so we've learned something that I've never heard in my life. It makes a little bit of sense, and I've tried to verify it with others and not getting the same results that Mark came to, that Bruiser Brody's gimmick not only had sight, sound, you know, powerful impact, whatever you want to say, but as far as the senses go, he also smelled some. Is that true, or is that Mark's you know, not understanding the smell of sweat or something?
But he didn't smell good. I don't know if I ever really paid that much attention, but probably not. They traveled. He'd wear the same clothes all over and over and over all the time. So it wouldn't surprise me if he didn't smell good, because he damn sure didn't look like he smelled good.
Well, that was kind of the point, right?
Yeah, I was real good friends with Frank, man. He helped me a lot. So I went to him, tell you a funny story about him. I came when I asked him one time. I said, "Hey, Frank, watch my match." And make a long story short, he watched my match, told me what I could do better and all that. And he had a lot of respect for me coming to him and asking him, you know, as a young guy trying to get better. And man, when I worked with him, then like the next time I worked with him, he was going off his feet, and everybody, I come back to the ref and remember, he's like, "What was that?" Brody didn't tell for nobody like that. I said, "I don't know, man. Maybe he likes me. I just, you know,
respect, man, respect."
Selling for me, you know, I drop kicked him. He went all the way off his feet to his back. So that shit that he just didn't do. But I think me asking him, I think he really appreciated that, you know, and seeing
somebody
wanting to learn.
Yeah,
that's cool, man. And especially back then, you listened to the, if you asked for that and then whatever he told you and you listened, I'm sure he even more appreciated that, you know?
Well, and even more so being Bruiser Brody, probably one of the toughest people on the planet.
Right.
Being shooting.
Right.
I wanted him, if something ever kicked off, I wanted him on my side.
Yeah.
He was a force to be reckoned with, man. So he was a legitimate badass. So.
Did you by chance see the Dark Side of the Ring episode about Bruiser Brody?
Yeah.
Yeah, our one of Wolfie's really great friends, our mutual friend Josephus, he was a pro wrestler until he passed away, unfortunately, played Bruiser Brody in the reenactments of that show. So, yeah, little tidbit there about our buddy Joe. Now,
he was hard to hard to get along with as far as the business.
Yeah.
If something, he didn't like something, he would damn sure tell you about it. He wasn't going You're gonna do what he wanted to do, one way or another.
Do you think that led to his ultimate death? Do you think that attitude?
I think they owed him some money down there in Puerto Rico.
Yeah,
and he didn't like what they were wanting to do for a finish or something. And I think a little bit of a couple different things about owing him some money. He didn't like the finish they were wanting to do, and things went. Then they that invader. Jose Gonzalez cut his guts out.
And how egotistical do you have to be to play with Bruiser Brody's money? Like, are you a moron? No. Like, I mean, I know that Invader got over on him, but whatever.
Wouldn't do it over here. They did it down there because they ran everything.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
The only place they could ever do something like that and then have it, the dude was acquitted. So
Seriously. Yeah.
That was terrible, man. That dude was a piece of shit anyway, that invader.
It's when they talk about the triumph and the tragedy of world class, obviously the Von Erichs, and we talked about the Iron Claw and stuff. That is a huge tragedy. That family, it's a tragic story, but also you got to lump in the Bruiser Brody tragedy as well. And then ultimately the Terry Gordy story. I mean, there's so much that it was
Rick Rude.
Yeah. Rick Rude. Buzz exactly. Collier. Yeah.
All them different people, man. I buried the boys, the Von Erichs, David, Mike, Chris, and Kerry. I buried four of some of the best friends I've ever had in 9 years.
And you never get over that, right? You never get over that.
Oh, man. From 84 to 93, I buried four of them. Yeah, it was almost numbing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like you had to compartmentalize it or you would get eat up with it, So
let's take a quick time out and get a word from one of my dope ass sponsors, and we'll be right back with more Live and in Color with Wolfie D.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
This is Nick from Captain's Corner, and I'm here to tell you about an amazing event that's happening on Saturday, April 20th in Orlando. That event is called Glory Days, and it takes place at the Rosen Center, which is right off International Drive. The Rosen Center has an assortment of restaurants, and on April 20th, it will hold dozens of international wrestling stars for what should be an unforgettable day. The lineup includes Ron Simmons, Stan Hansen, Larry Zbysko, Kimberly Page, Matt Riddle, Devon Dudley, and many others. One of the featured events at Glory Days is a world-class championship wrestling panel that will feature discussion on the Von Erichs, the Iron Claw movie, the Sportatorium, and so much more by the people that lived it, including the one-man gang, Al Perez, Missy Hyatt, and more. Tickets are available now, and they are as low as $30. Head on over to Eventbrite and type in Glory Days. Hope to see everyone in Orlando for Glory Days on April 20th.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Can I ask this, though? The thing I've never understood, and I promise we can edit out whatever you don't want on here. Why do you think that he really ended his life, if that's something you want to talk about?
Well, everybody has their conjecture. I was here. I think basically, he was already in trouble, and I think he caught another case, and I don't think he saw himself getting over that. Having to deal with it. So I think he made a decision to end his life so he wouldn't have to face the legal ramifications that he was getting ready to have to do.
Gotcha.
That's my personal opinion. We'll end it at that.
Yeah,
that's fine. And like I said, if you don't want that on air, please tell me now.
We'll get that. That's the truth of the matter. What I mean? So.
Yeah. Such an incredible athlete, man, and like right at his prime there. And one of my favorite, Jimmy knows this, the Road Warriors, Mr. Perfect, and those people are the ones that made me want to be in the business. The scene Carrie worked, Mr. Perfect, Curt Hennig, man, that was some awesome stuff, man. Carrie against Mr. Perfect, that was great stuff. And then all of a sudden, Carrie's gone.
Curt is a great worker, man.
Yeah, Kurt was awesome.
He was the perfect person to work with Terry.
Yeah. Because,
he knew the business extremely well, and he could bump, and then Kerry, he could make Kerry, all the shit Kerry was messing up and missing the spots, he could cover it up,
Yeah.
I mean, he was doing that with one foot, essentially, A great match with one foot, what I mean?
Really good, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a tough thing to go through. I think he had he thought if he was going to be in trouble and have to do time or something, he didn't want to have everybody know, that he had a half a foot, that he had a prosthesis. I don't think he wanted that to, because if you went to prison, there's no way you're going to hide that, So,
right. Yeah.
I don't think he wanted to go through that. So it was a shame, man. I was driving down the highway. It's really, really where they live between Lake Dallas and Denton. There's a little town. It's just a incorporated deal called Shady Shores. And I was actually driving down the highway, and they said Kerry Von Erich had just committed suicide. And I was like 100 yards from the exit where it was at, where the Fritz's place. And I took that exit and I went straight down there and drove down there. That's when Fritz was there, and they had Kerry covered up with a tarp and everything. I mean, I got there like probably 15 or 20 minutes after it happened. And
oh my gosh.
Brent was just beside himself. And he was saying, not Kerry, He was just sick, because Kerry was his favorite,
Yeah, no doubt. And I mean, that line that you hear in the trailer for the Iron Claw, you hear him say, my favorite's Kerry, and then so on and so forth after that. I mean, is that something you think Fritz would have actually said to the boys?
Oh, well, they all knew it.
Okay.
In trouble, when they were younger, when Kevin, David, and Kerry would all be together, they would talk Kerry into taking the fall for it, because then they wouldn't get in any trouble.
Gotcha.
Even if he didn't do it, the big brother would say, "Hey, say you did it so we don't get our asses beat." And Kerry sometimes would do it,
That's
and then
funny.
None of them would get in trouble, because it was Fritz would he didn't whip Kerry's ass like he did everybody else's. So
what do you think, Brian, if that hadn't happened, what would Kerry's career be like today?
I think of that from time to time. Hard to say. It'd be interesting, because that's all they knew. And I just wondered, with world class already gone, I think he might have gone into doing something like Michael Hayes did, maybe working behind the scenes,
Yeah.
So, okay, that's interesting to me. That's interesting because, like, Michael's known for being very creative and stuff. So was Carrie not only just a great athlete and a great in-ring performer, but he was also creative and could probably pass it along to others? Because that, to me, that's a hard thing to do, is to pass it along to others.
No, but I'm saying, you know, you asked, I just think that could have been possibly something he could have done.
Okay. Yeah.
Maybe okay. If he would have not passed away. So just to, you know.
Yeah. What are your thoughts on Michael Hayes? It could be, and the reason I say this, I mean, I've been around him when I worked with Vince and stuff like that, and he's getting a lot of credit right now for that the last thing they did with you know, the Rock's back, and just the ass whooping he gave Cody on the outside of the building and all this kind of stuff, and this whole deal, they're giving Michael Hayes a lot of credit for producing all this. Michael's always been like that.
Yeah, he had a great mind for the business. Michael's always a good booker type angle guy, you know.
Yeah.
The best angle guy ever in the business, bar none, was David Mann. So David didn't always get enough credit, but David was the angle man here that came up with 99.9% of the stuff that ever happened in world class.
That's awesome.
Depending on what people say, don't let them kid you. It was David Manning.
Yeah, that guy is so interesting. When I listen to interviews with him, man, you can tell he knows where the body. And this is a horrible way to say this, knowing the tragedy of all that in world class. But you can tell that David knows the skeletons in the closet and where the bodies are buried. And I mean, he seems like he's a very fun guy to hang out with too, though.
No, he's the best, man. We're still really good friends today. I cherish him. Yeah, super intelligent. He's just a self-made multimillionaire, you know?
Oh, really? Okay, that's even better.
Yeah, he owns a travel agency.
Gotcha.
All different kinds of stuff. Yeah, he's a sharp guy, man. Yeah, I deer hunt on his property out in Texas, so.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
I want to hear you talk about Al Perez because we had him on, like I said, and then my transition from the PG-13 Memphis guy that I was, Wolfie D, into TNA, got a WWE little tryout with that as Slash, and I changed my whole deal up. I changed my moveset. I gained a bunch of weight, shaved my head. A lot of people that knew me, and to this day, they were like, I did not know you were Slash, Wolfie. But anyway, so we had Al on. And you remember the helicopter move he used to do?
Yeah.
Where he'd pick them up and spin them? Well, I started doing that in the early 2000s. And everybody's like, where'd you get that from? Where did you make that up? I'm like, no, I stole it from Al Perez. and it's because he got out of the business.
I did that as a finish with Mr. Ito in Starrcade 84.
You sure really? Did. Yeah, he sure did.
Did you do it good? Because Al said nobody could do it good.
I will say he did it good. Yes.
Okay. All right.
When you watch it, I was running super fast. So.
Yeah. Yeah. It did have a brisker pace than Al's. Yeah. And yours. It was definitely. Now, was that the first time you'd ever done that?
No, I was actually using that finish over there for a while.
Okay. Gotcha. Ow. Okay.
Okay. So I've got to look this up. So, because I told Al, I said, we should have crossed paths. We could have done the angle, you know, considering the age difference. I said, we should have done the angle with the battle of the, I called it the whirly bird. He called it the helicopter. I don't know what you called it, but yeah, I love that move.
The airplane spin. There you go. Okay.
Yeah. Mr. Ito, we did like 4 minutes since Starrcade 84.
I just recently watched that match, actually.
Okay, so. You got to send that to me, Jimmy. I will.
Yeah, I will. I will.
I would dare to see anybody did it faster than me.
All right.
Footer, I could really move my feet. I'll let you be the judge when you watch it.
Well, Wolfie, I did a girl one time.
I did Mickey James one time, and I think Jimmy said it. What'd you say, Jimmy?
That she's still spinning out there in space somewhere. Of course, she was a 120-pound girl or however
That's
much
right.
she weighed. But
it
still,
I
you
still
know,
did it.
Yeah, 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 you did it well. But yeah, it's hilarious. A good.
I did not know that, Brian. That's awesome.
Yeah. You know, one of the recent things that I've seen that I absolutely loved, and this is going to kind of take it back to Kerry, but you in that promo that you're turning heel and you're there and Al Madrill is in the ring. Let me just say this, okay? If you did not know that Kerry was the good guy and you were working away from him and all that, your argument was not a bad argument. You were like, I want to do this on my own. I want to see if I can make my own name. You know, I don't want to just be Kerry's friend. And it was a very good argument. I mean, honestly, I think that might have put one of those light bulbs off, you know, to me, that maybe all of the heel promos were based on fact, like, hey, I'm just trying to do better for myself. But you had a really good argument for it. And obviously Kerry's not having any of it. And Al's standing there kind of fired up with you. But how did you feel about that promo? Because I thought it was an incredible promo.
Well, that was my idea 100%. And we didn't want to just go where I just went off and turned heel. So we made it look like it was a split second decision.
Yeah.
You know, I'm looking good and evil, good and evil. That's when I was looking back and forth, looking at Kevin and then looking at Al Madrill. He said, come on, do you want to make big money? You want it all? So that, boom, it's like I made the decision to go to the dark side right then. And that even made it better, because I was on the fence. I was kind of running around going, oh, what should I do? We made it look like I didn't know what to do. But when confronted with, do I want to make big money and do I want to be greedy and do something for myself? That's when I made the move to hit Kevin. And then it was all set then.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it was great. It was incredible. And Mark's right there with you, standing in the ring. And
Mark jumping in there, acting like a damn Mark. trying to keep us from beating on Kerry. He comes back to the back. I told Lorenz, I said, what are you doing? He said, man, he said, I don't know what came over me. He said, I just got overwhelmed, like I needed to help him. I was like, you goofy fuck. But for me, that's what it really made it great, because he got so into it and knows it's his work and did it anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. And that was the thing about, you know, Mark, is he told us he was not a fan of wrestling. He got into it because and then boom, after that, he becomes a fan of wrestling. He turned it. It was his life at that point. Yeah. And so I could see you're saying that. I could see him just losing his sense and going Mark on us. Yeah.
Next time, talk to him, ask him about that. But did you see that when Al Madrill, he hit Kerry and bent that crutch?
Yes.
And the little rubber deal on the shoulder thing went flying off.
Shot off,
and
yeah.
It looked great. It looked like he was killing him.
Yeah. That is just a great way to turn heel, is to fight the Von Erichs in Texas.
Well, of course, yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah, yeah.
Let me ask you this. Jimmy knows this. I ask people this. I hate this question when it's asked to me, because it's so hard to answer. What's your favorite match and best opponent? Like, I guess those all go in one, but who's your favorite match and best opponent? You know,
well, I guess the best match, not including me, was
best match with you.
My best match
you ever worked? Yeah.
I would probably have to say me and Kerry at Reunion Arena when he came back the first time when he had his motorcycle wreck, and then that cage match when me and Kevin. At Mesquite Rodeo Arena.
Yeah.
And I had some really good matches with Tully Blanchard, too.
Yeah. Okay. Okay.
See, that's the thing I'm saying on that. It's like there's so many, like, what was your best match ever? I've got a couple for different reasons. And like you just said, one was a cage match, but then one was a technical match with Tully. You know, it's just different.
Exactly. Yeah. It was, because I was out there when Dusty came from Florida and took over the book in the Carolinas, you know, and then I stayed there for a while. And then when I saw that was not going to be good, Dusty was using me. He was using me really good. Oh. He really wanted to do something with me, but I saw what was happening there, and it wasn't going to be the place to be. And that's when I came back to Dallas.
Yeah,
worked a little bit, and then deal. That was my plan all along, to come back and turn heel.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah. Well, speaking of heels, I got to always get this. Anytime I'm talking to a Texas guy, I got to get
here it
this
comes. Here it
you
comes.
Know it. Brrr, drum roll, please.
Gary Hart.
Gary Hart. Do you have anything? Gary, I did manage in the business for a little while, and that's how I met Wolfie. And I modeled myself after Gary Hart. The listeners are entirely tired of that story, so I'll never say it again. But with that being said, Gary Hart, what were your interactions with him?
Well, Gary was the booker when I broke in.
Right.
1979 and 80. So
yeah,
I was basically one of his boys that came in under. Probably had one of the best minds for the business ever.
Yeah.
He was a consummate, just a great guy for the business, man. Really knew his stuff, knew every aspect, you know.
Yeah.
So to work with Fritz for a long time, you had to be pretty good. And he was with Fritz for a good while. But yeah, Gary was great.
Yeah.
I love Gary.
So training for you, you and Carrie, you know, buddies since first grade or whatever. So Fritz trained you, but did like you and Carrie train each other, or did Fritz train you, or like, what was your training like?
Well, Carrie and I did some amateur together when we were younger, but as far as the professional stuff, I went down to the Sportatorium and, Sakurada and a Mr. Ito. And what was the other big Japanese guy? I'll think I'll hear them in a minute. They got in trouble with Ken Patera.
Oh, man. I know who you're talking about.
Sakurada was a real stiff guy from Japan. That he was Kendo Nagasaki later.
But,
called him Sakurada. But there was three Japanese guys here. Saito was the other one that I was trying to think of.
Yeah, Saito, yeah.
And him and two other, Sakurada, Saito, and another guy, they actually beat on me for about 3 weeks down at the Sportatorium in the summer of 80 when it was so hot. Then finally, Fritz came down there and they said, hey, we're tired of beating on him. He's good to go. So then David Manning and then Gary Young and Kerry and David and Kevin came down there and worked with me in the mornings. That in the summer, and I wrestled for about 2 months down there that summer before I started working. So,
gotcha.
But, I was still in college, so I couldn't, being in NCAA, I couldn't wrestle being a pro and being in NCAA, except only when I was out of school for the summer.
Gotcha. Okay.
Until I graduated. So.
Yeah. So they didn't throw you under the hood or anything like that, like they would do Macho Man or somebody. Gotcha. Okay. Was Fritz a pretty strict, I mean, knowing him all your life. Now, this is kind of similar because when Wolfie came into the business, he was trained by Gypsy Joe. Gypsy kind of had a thing for his mom, even if it was just a friend, you know, and he took it easy on Wolfie there, and you know, lies that. But did Fritz take it easy on you? Did the guys he had in the, I mean,
he told him, as a matter of fact, he did just the opposite. He told me, he said, Brian, I don't want anybody to ever say in this wrestling business that you broke in and you got to just walk in here.
Right.
He said, these Japanese guys are going to be extremely rough on you and they're going to try to break you. And I knew I only had one shot. So, I mean, they beat the shit out of me for 3 weeks, dude. I mean, beat the crap out of me and couldn't make me quit. And I remember Sakurada finally, Fritz would come down there like once a week. He said, Sakurada said, he's good to go.
Go ahead and break him in. He's good to go.
We can't make him stop. So, I wouldn't give up, you know?
Yeah, that's got to be part of it, right? Crap.
I didn't get no free ride, that's for sure.
Yeah, and I don't want to imply that Wolfie did. I don't mean it. No. Anytime you train with Gypsy Joe, it's not. Story. Right, yeah. Yeah, I appreciate that, yeah.
Oh, well, Gypsy just liked my mom, like you said, man. I was lucky, man. My mom was pretty, and Gypsy liked her. And, I was 15.
I wish it would have been my deal. I wish Fritz would have had a thing for my mom and been
with my mom. I was 15 years old. He backed me into the corner. And everybody, you know, was scared of Gypsy's chops and all this kind of stuff. And they're like, he's going to chop the shit out of you. And, you know, blah, blah, blah. He backed me in the corner and he said, don't worry, brother. And he forearmed me in the chest. He never chopped me the whole match. He gave me flying head scissors. He gave me all kinds of stuff. It was awesome. I'm glad my mom was pretty to him.
Yeah, hey, no matter, take a break any way you can get it, huh?
Yeah, no kidding, man. Oh, well, you know, Brian, it's been a pleasure having you on, man. One of the things we definitely have to talk about, though, is coming up on April 20th of this month, Rosen Center in Orlando. You're going to be down there at the Glory Days Grapple Con. First of all, talk about the event, but tell us how much you enjoy getting out and seeing the people.
Man, for me, it's an awakening again. I've been away from wrestling for a while, but going back to different states and seeing the people that just really love what you did. All these people just love world-class wrestling. I mean, I have so many people in Florida and New York and New Jersey that know more about my wrestling business than I did.
Absolutely.
They did everything and tell me this match and that match, but Florida, it kind of has a special place. I was in Fort Lauderdale a couple of years back, and I was with Nick up in New York at LaGuardia back in 2018. So Nick is a great guy. He puts on a first-class event, and I just love him to death. He's a great promoter, and everything he does is right on the money. But Florida is a real cool place. They had ESPN back when we was doing World Class. It was real strong down there. So I always look forward to going to Florida and there in Orlando on April 20th and seeing everybody once again.
That's awesome. Hey, did you know you worked Global, right, when Global first came out?
I think I wrestled there one time.
Okay. I was going to ask about one of my good buddies, Jerry Lynn. You know Jerry Lynn?
I don't, man. I don't remember hardly anybody from that. I was getting out of the business. Man, so
I got you. Yeah, I got you.
And was that promoted as like the global version of USWA? Is that true? It's what I read.
I guess I didn't really pay much attention. Like I think they called me in there and I did like one shot or something.
Gotcha. Okay.
I don't even remember the truth.
Gotcha. Yeah. 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 Did you wrestle for USWA at all when that changeover happened?
I don't recall that either.
I couldn't see. I didn't find any matches with you in that company. Yeah.
So. Very cool to have you on here, Brian. We really appreciate this.
Talking to you guys. So are y'all going to be down there in Orlando?
We wish.
No. We're not.
We wish. Okay.
We're not. We collaborate with Nick, and then sometimes I do, you know, a couple signings here and there, and my partner doesn't want to do the things he needs to do to make us be able to do these things. So
that's a very nice way to say it.
Yeah, that's all.
That's,
I mean.
That's the only bad thing about being a tag team guy.
You're absolutely. Right. He won't do it, man. I got him booked on 100, not 100, but I got him booked on a bunch of stuff, and then he no shows him. And you know Bill Dundee, right? Obviously.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So you know Jamie, and that was my partner, and Jamie just does Jamie, and they book us on these things, and then he no shows him, and you know, so it's kind of screwed me on the ass end of it, and whatever.
Well, just stop booking him.
Well, the thing is, these collectors, when they want stuff, they want you to sign. Yeah, they're paying $20 an autograph. They want both on their thing, and you know it's hard for me to get booked on that. And then my other partner when I was with TNA is Brian Lee, and Brian Lee is nowhere to be found.
He's somewhere, but we don't know where.
I mean, we know where he is, but he just won't answer nobody.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, people have, Al Madrill doesn't want to do anything either. So, you know, I knew Al was that way anyway, but it's, everybody has their own little deal. My favorite show is getting ready to come on, and my wife and Monica and I are getting ready to watch. So
what is your favorite show? We must know this.
Yeah, what's your favorite show? And we'll let you go.
Tales of Wells Fargo.
Nice. Okay. Awesome. Very cool.
Westerns.
I love
Westerns. Thank you, Brian, for joining us. Thank you so much.
Thank you, sir.
It was nice talking to you.
All right. Well, Brian Adidas has to watch his new show with his family, and God bless him. I wish I had a show to watch with my family. But we'll be back in just a minute with Ask Wolfie D Anything.
DJ, hit the music.
Ask Wolfie D Anything.
right. We are back with Ask Wolfie D Anything. And first off, man, Brian Adias. What a cool dude, man. Really good
dude. Very cool. I enjoyed that very much, man. Very cool.
Yeah, very much so. He was definitely, you know, not knowing exactly what to expect with this conversation. And I feel like, man, he, you know, knowing so much about the Von Erichs, that was just a great conversation to have and talk to him about. So,
sure.
So once again, thank you to Captain Corner Nick. You know, he's been hooking us up. Like I said, thank you so much, Nick. We've had a lot of fun. Definitely appreciate you, you know, working with us to help work with you, man. It's definitely cool to work together with people and that's what it's all about. So today we've got some awesome questions, as always. Definitely appreciate that and the listeners for sending them in. Here's a cool one. So we'll start off with this one. Of course, our old buddy Ben Martin, Ben Martin 88. This one's kind of more of a statement, but just be something cool to run past you. So he's like, here's one you can run past Wolfie D. Just a fantasy team here, but just imagine Disciples of the New Church 2024. Mm-hmm. Okay. The Carnies. Okay, Nick and Carrie Offal, yeah. Slash, of course, mm-hmm. Sue Young, and Father James Mitchell. Wow.
That'd be a cool little group.
Yeah, man. You know, yeah. you being the elder statesman now, and, you know, I don't know if you're ready to be I guess you're the main single star in that one right there, but
I think I would have to be because they're a tag team.
You're right, and then Sue Young is a female, so, you know.
I like those guys, man, because they were very good to me. They came to my school, not for me to train them, but for me to brush them up and give them, you know, try to take them to the next level. And I think they learned a lot, and they took it to the next level with their stuff, man. They started getting booked all over the place, and I'm not saying it's because of me. I'm not trying to take that credit, but I enjoyed working with them, man. They were respectful, and they listened and applied what I was trying to tell them.
Yeah. No, that's exactly. And you know what's so funny is they were going through a run of people working with people and stuff and, you know, working all kinds of cool names like Brian Lee Condry together. They worked a lot of cool people, man. And, you know, then they work with you in your school. And, you know, they were all about getting finishing touches
they worked hard,
man. Many people as hard. Possible. So
thing where especially Nick's gimmick got kind of ripped off by a couple of people. I'm not sure their names, and I'm not knocking nobody. I'm just saying he had a good idea there, and I've seen it, I think, on more than one person.
Yeah, it's out there, and wow, yeah, what are you going to do, man?
It stings.
yeah, exactly.
It is what it is, man.
It is what it is, but it is a cool gimmick. Carrie is, you know, they started out as a boy and his dog, and then they turned into, you know, this, like, circus act, almost like a American Horror Story meets, like, you know, the evil circus or something, but right. Yeah. Yes, Psycho Circus. I love it. Yeah. Well, anyway, thanks, Ben. That was a good statement question, I guess. I like it. Yeah. Theory.
Sue would be the new Belladonna.
Definitely. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. That would be cool. Yeah. Okay, cool. So the next question is from Aros 2 Cents on YouTube. He says, hey, how do you believe history would be different had TNA only used Double J Jeff Jarrett as a backstage presence rather than being TNA's Triple H? In a world where Triple H was costing wrestling millions of fans every year and leading to it taking a long time to get people to really give TNA a chance.
Yeah. Man, unfortunately, that's always been a thing for Jeff, man. And it's not like an ego thing. I mean, it's just when you're a promoter, son, and you know the way he came in, I mean, he was a referee at first, even, but you know, then he gets into business and he's beating everybody, and you know, it just comes with that, man. I mean, look at all the guys that, you know, had to follow in their father's footsteps, especially when the fans knew that the dad was the booker or whatever. I mean, that's just a hard hill to climb,
right?
And Jeff is a talent, man. I mean,
right.
Say that, I mean, he didn't help TNA. And what's he going to do, book himself to get beat every week? No.
Right.
But, I mean, and it's not like he kept the belt and, you know, nobody could beat him and all this. You know, he just booked himself as a main eventer, which in that, on that roster, can you argue that he's not?
No, you had to have that presence of a veteran.
So I get it. You know, where people are like, oh, he's only doing that because of this. Well, there's a whole bunch of that in the world and in wrestling. There's a whole lot of people that are in positions, you know, for various reasons, man. And it's hard because I know the person. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
That person has always been good to me, and I've worked around him a lot, and so it's hard for me to say he didn't deserve that, and they would have been better off if he had just stayed in the back, because heck, that'd be like a backup quarterback. Who wants to be a backup quarterback that thinks they could still start?
Right, exactly. Yeah, and I mean that's it's tough to say for him to have stayed in the back and just pushed like AJ and Samoa Joe or guys like that. I mean, you know, to me, at your time, it would have been AJ, and AJ wasn't prime time ready yet.
Right.
You
know? Another role playing is he's out there getting guys over.
Right. You know, right.
Getting them ready.
Right. Yeah. He had to do what he did to get a bunch of guys ready to be, because y'all hadn't signed those Kurt Angles and Stings yet. Y'all hadn't, you know what I mean? You hadn't brought in and James Storm and Robert Roode and those guys were not ready to be primetime players yet. You know, it was the early days, and I guess he did what he had to do. And, you know, I don't think TNA would have been the same had he not. So,
yeah. I agree, man. I agree. So it's just kind of one of those catch-22s.
It is. Yeah. All right. Well, thank you for that question. I do appreciate his point of view there, but I don't know that it would have worked if he hadn't. So, okay. The next one is a good one here. This one is from, oh, God, these names. at Iberbuki. Okay. Iberbuki. Okay, so he asked this. How did contracts work back in those days? Would you get signed, or was it just a paper appearance?
Everybody's was different. I don't know. You know, that's one thing about then, okay? There was no internet to tell you whose deal was what and who just got signed today and released and all that shit. So at first, it was just a nightly deal, no contract, no nothing. Then there was a point where I signed a contract, and it was based on a guarantee of 26 weeks out of the year. So half the year.
Gotcha. Okay.
Guaranteed X amount of money per appearance. And that was how it worked.
So was with the contract, I'm going to ask this because that brought up a good question. You said per appearance. Let's pretend like you get hurt. Okay. All right. You get hurt first match, second match, whatever. How do those contracts work when you're on the shelf?
Bro, I'll be honest with you. I didn't read that motherfucker. I just signed it. I had a job, and, here, lock me in for a year. Yeah, I'll do it. It's in Nashville. I only got to wrestle on Wednesdays. And plus, I'm getting a paycheck from the job that I had at the time. So it really didn't matter to me.
Okay. And then let's just pretend like you were healthy, but you didn't work that week. Let's just say you didn't get booked. Would you get still paid because of the contract?
Or? No. Like, come on, at the end of the year, when that year was up, and they moved to Orlando and they weren't re-signing me, I was not given 26 days out of that year, 26 bookings out of that year. So they owed me money. And at the end of it, you know, they ended up giving me what they owed me.
Gotcha. Yeah, that makes sense. So since they, I mean, that's fair, but I mean, you had to fight for that, right? You didn't have to.
Yeah,
and that kind of caused some issues there. We've talked about this. Slash and TNA, go check it out. We've got a great episode about it. So, but when they're all available on YouTube, y'all, so go check them out there now. So, but anyway, that's interesting. I think the idea of contracts as an independent contractor, it's kind of like an oxymoron, right? It's like, you're an independent contractor and we're taking care of you, but you know,
right. Yep.
Anyway. So, well, that's all I got for today, brother, on this very special Brian Adias episode. So
it was good. Next week, tune in. We're having Bunkhouse Buck, Jimmy Golden, who's going to be on the show. Like I said earlier, be down at the Kayfabe Cave coming up real soon. Can't wait to talk to him. What else, Jimmy, is there anything else we're missing here?
Yeah, just don't, nobody, none of y'all listeners send in questions asking how big Robert Fuller's hose is, okay?
Yeah, and usually we don't have this opportunity, but if you want to send in questions for Jimmy next week, send them in. Usually we don't know for sure when we're finishing up here. So yeah, if you want to send in some questions for Jimmy, help us out. Shoot.
Yeah, please do. I do have some that we're already got, so I'm excited. Okay. I think it'll be fun, man. First of all, it's just going to be cool to have Jimmy Golden on the show, man. So,
I talked to him a little bit. He's a real cool guy.
I'm sure he is. You didn't know him before that?
I met him once.
Okay.
I believe once or twice. But yeah, cool. we had a nice little conversation, so it'll be a good show.
Yeah, it'll definitely be a good show, and we thank y'all, and we thank Todd Camp for hooking that up, and thank Nick for these last three. So y'all are, man, these vendors are awesome people, dude.
Yeah, man, for sure. So yeah. we'll holler at you next week, folks, and just remember, there's snakes all around you, and they are kayfabed and camouflaged, let me tell you. So tune in next week, and we'll talk some more shizzle with you.
And now a word from our sponsor.
Todd here from the Kayfabe Cave in Pulaski, Tennessee. On April 20th, 2024, from 12 noon to 3 p.m., the legendary Jimmy Golden will be in the house for a meet and greet. He will be in Bunkhouse Buck character as well for a great photo opportunity. For those of you who cannot make it in person, we will have a Facebook Live virtual signing from 3 to 4 p.m. Photo ops are $30. Autographed 8x10s or personal items are $30. A double autographed print of Jimmy and his other half, Bunkhouse Buck, is $40. We offer a combo which includes a photo op, autographed item of your choice, and an autographed event poster for $50. Don't miss this, as Jimmy does not do many appearances anymore. This is a rare opportunity to meet a legend who has been in the ring with a you name them list of guys. For all updates and events, like and follow us on social media at the Kayfabe Cave.
Saturday, May 11th, 2024, the biggest pro wrestling event in Columbia, Tennessee's history, Muletown Mania Fan Fest. Over 50 wrestlers from the past and present going to be there for the meet and greet from 2:30 to 5:30. Also that night, TriStar Wrestling has a huge card already signed. Doors open at 6 for that. Bell time will be 7 p.m. You're not going to want to miss it. A huge card already signed. Also, Give Me Back My Pro Wrestling will be in the house that night doing a Q&A with the Devils, the Wild Boys, and the Mortons from 4:30 to 5:30. Also, you have Kayfabe Cave there, your toy collectibles and wrestling memorabilia dealers. They're going to be in the house. Also, we've got the Devil's Disciples. Mephisto and Dante will be there. The Wild Boys, Ben Jordan and Steve Neely. The Monster, Forsaken. The Fox, Tony Falk and LT Falk. The Morton Brothers, Steve and Shane Morton. The Smoking Buds, Cody and David Morton. Jerry Lynn and Virginia Morton. Hot Rod Biggs. Jeff the Crippler Daniels and Dominique will be there. Debbie Combs, Lady Superstar. Sunny Street will be in the house. Luscious Quentin Charisma. One Half of Booty Call, Brian Turner. Mad Max. Cowboy Billy Montana, Scott Spade and Mistress Misery, Superstar Mikey Dunn, DBSG, Johnny Bandana and Ryder Anderson, The New Era, Tavon Jordan, D'Amico Graves, the one and only Majestic, Mr. Entertainment, Yukon Jack, yours truly, Pat Dooley, DJ R, Danny Pig, The Voice, Kane D, Pretty Boy, Preston Adams, plus many, many more. The meet and greet will be $15 if you buy your ticket in advance, $20 at the door. TriStar Wrestling that night, $10 if you buy your ticket in advance, $12 if you buy it at the door. This is a huge night, Saturday night, May 11th, 2024, in Columbia, Tennessee, at the National Guard Armory at 844 North James Campbell Boulevard. It's going to be the place to be for the best wrestling action around. Come and meet some of your local stars, some of your favorite people, some of your least favorite people from your past and present. This is going to be an opportunity that you're not going to want to miss. This is going to be well worth the price of admission alone just for the meet and greet. And then TriStar Wrestling that night. Biggest wrestling event ever signed in Columbia, Tennessee.
gentlemen, welcome to Give Me Back My Pro Wrestling, the podcast that's based on the old school but can still help you find the good stuff from today. Jimmy Street and the Plastic Sheik, Jared, are the undisputed tag team champions of the wrestling podcast world. From thought-provoking topics to superstar interviews to action figure expertise, this team does it all. And all they ask is, give me back my pro wrestling! Every other Thursday, wherever you listen to podcasts.
That's right, it's the talk of Middle Tennessee, the channel you love to hate and the channel you hate to love. It's Brian Turner from Brian Turner's VHS Rehab. And if you're looking for matches from Wolfie D to Jerry Lawler to Dusty Rhodes and the team that put a pimp before your eyes and a goatee between your thighs, Boudica and Athena, go to LostWrestling.com. See, I made it easy for you. Brian Turner's VHS Rehab. Booyah!
Join me, Gene Jackson, for the Jackson Interaction Podcast, where I'll be doing one-on-one interviews with people from the world of professional wrestling, as well as stand-up comedy. You can get them anywhere podcasts are available in both video and audio form, but you can find them all at GeneJacksonPod.com.
So that was another great episode. Hey, Wolfie, tell them where they can find you on social media.
Jimmy, they can find me in the club, bottle full of bub. I'm just kidding. They can find me on Facebook. My personal page is Warren Wolf, W-O-L-F-E. I'm on Instagram, at WarrenWolf13.
You can always find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube, at LiveWolfieD. Here's the thing. Wolfie always has offers for his autographed photos. He has a selection of some awesome photos from throughout his career that he will autograph and personalize any way that you want him to. Just contact him either directly at his personal Facebook page or through any one of our other pages, and we'll make sure you get in contact directly with Wolfie. Get those photos, right, Wolfie?
Yeah, I've got some good stuff on there, you know, to help with the podcast.
Folks, if you can't get out to a show to meet Wolfie D, there's nothing like that, especially for the fans of PG-13 and Wolfie D. And before we go, you can always find me, your host, Jimmy Street, at James Rock Street on Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube.
And hey, Jimmy, before we go real quick, I just want to add in there, from the bottom of my heart, I really appreciate, first of all, the work you've done for this podcast. You have worked your butt off. Secondly, the people that are liking the page. Beyond that, even more, is the people that are listening. And we really appreciate that.
Yeah, and remember, guys, the podcast drops a new episode every Monday at noon, and our past episodes are streaming now on demand on all major podcast formats. Thanks again.
I got a cat for your dome.
He got a cat for your dome.
I got a cat
he
for
got
your
a dome. Cat
for your dome.
He got a cat for your dome.
And here we go. The original white boy that came out sagging, not bragging, don't be hating, cause I'm spitting the truth. Still living in color. From Rush, your mother, utilize a hubcap. I'm like any other. Back in the day, I was N.O.D. and I was P to the G plus the 1 and the 3. In case you forgot, they call me Wolfie D. Been cloned and copied so many times. Tired of suckers taking credit for what is mine. You know who you are without me name dropping. Wrestling's first white boy coming out hip hop. Been doing it like this since 92. Laid low for a while and you thought I was through. Listen real close to these rhymes that I've injected. This shit's so sick it makes your ears get infected. Mad skills, no faking, there is no one great. Cause I'm bringing more folks than Obi-Wan or Vader. Not here to play games, so you better beware. You don't like me, so what?
I really don't care.
Like time I keep ticking and I can't be stopped. You suck a step to the side unless you wanna get dropped. When I finish, I'll straight knock you out. Please allow me to tell you what it's all about. I'm gonna wind it up, then I'm driving it home. It's Wolfie D, baby. Huh, I got a cap for your dome.
You got a cap for your dome. You got a cap for your dome. You got a cap for your dome.
This has been a James Rock Street production.